I'm Emily Curitan, co-hosting this hour, which includes Vents Day with Jeff. We're jumping into fall campaign coverage today with an extended examination of Oregon ballot measure 97.
The measure was hotly debated even before it got its place and number on the ballot because it's about taxes and spending, always hot topics. If it passes, measure 97 would change Oregon law as it relates to taxes on corporations, specifically the C corporations. We'll explain that. If they make more than $25 million in Oregon sales, they will pay more.
And the additional revenue expected to be around $3 billion a year. That would make a big difference to the Oregon budget for schools and everything else. Let's meet people with strong views on both sides. On the yes side, we've got Peter Buckley, state representative for Ashland, and Seamus Linsky, Oregon Consumer League representative. On the no side of things, Steve Buckstein from the Cascade Policy Institute. He's a founder there and a senior policy analyst, as well as Eric Fruits, an Economics International Corporation president and an adjunct professor at Portland State University.
So let's go around the table first and get some idea about where you're starting from on all of this. Representative Peter Buckley, let's begin with you.
Thanks, Jeff. Good morning. The way I start on this is to point out that Oregon has a structural deficit in our budget that we gave ourselves when we passed Measure 5 in 1990, and we've never addressed it. It gave the major responsibility for the K-12 budget to the state budget without the resources to pay for it. We've patched together the budget best we could every session, and we've hit a point where there's no more patches left. We're about $2 billion short of what the quality education model shows that we need to be spending to get the kind of educational outcomes that we say as a state that we want and that our kids deserve. So that's a significant deficit that can be addressed and must be addressed. It's been 25 years, and we've let two generations of kids go through our K-12 system without being able to address it. Measure 97 gives us the opportunity to address it. It's the first serious effort to address it in 25 years, and I believe it has to pass.
Seamus Linsky from the Oregon Consumer League, give us an idea of where you and your group stand on this.
Thanks for having me this morning. Like a representative said, you know, Oregon is in great need. We've got the 39th in the nation in school funding. We have the third largest class sizes. We've got the fourth lowest graduation rate. We still have more than 300,000 Oregonians living without health care, and services to seniors are dwindling. So we have this great need. The Oregon Consumer League got involved because we see this as a solution that really does make large and out-of-state corporations pay, and we don't see this as affecting Oregon consumers.
And Steve Buckstein from the Cascade Policy Institute, what's your take? Where are you coming from on Measure 97?
Well, I think Measure 97 is really a facade of a $3 billion annual tax on business, but it really is a sales tax on steroids, as a former chief economist of the state of Oregon called it. And the economists at Legislative Revenue Office and at Portland State, all public employees, all say that it is largely a consumption tax, meaning a sales tax, but you don't see the charge on your bill. So it's really disingenuous, I think, to call this a tax on business. It is largely a tax on all of us as consumers.
And Eric Fruits, an adjunct professor at Portland State University, where do you come in on this argument?
Well, I'm kind of surprising that a consumer league would be in favor of this tax measure because it's clearly anti-consumer. No matter who looks at it, the analysis comes down and says, you know, consumers, households are going to end up paying a huge share of it. It's about $600 for the average family. It's regressive, so that the poorer you are, the bigger a chunk of your income it's going to take. It affects every single minute of your life, from the electricity you buy when you wake up, to the gas you buy when you go to work, to the Starbucks, to the Fred Meyer where you do your shopping. It hits you on every part of your life. It's even going to hit nonprofits and schools. If you drive in front of your school and you see a Cisco truck in front, that's higher cost for school lunches. Just about every facet of our life is going to be more expensive. And then the other problem with it, too, is that there's simply no accountability for what happens with the money. There's no plan for implementation, there's no measures of success, and there's no investment strategies on how the money is going to be spent.
Let's talk about how money is spent by the legislature. Representative Peter Buckley, you are on the you're co-chair of the Ways and Means Committee, done a lot of budget work. Why do we need the additional revenue?
Because, again, we have a structural deficit that we haven't been able to address, and as noted, we are one of the least successful states in funding education. We don't have the resources to invest in education at the level that we need to. And the idea that, that there's no, you know, kind of limitations on how the money is spent, to me, is nonsensical. If you look at the past 20 years, the legislative priorities have been consistent from both parties in both chambers. We're doing everything we can to fund education. We squeeze every dollar to try to fund education, and we need the resources in order to do it. So the argument that somehow the legislature is going to spend this on something other than education is absurd in my mind. It's been a priority, again, for both parties in both chambers for over two decades now. And we are going to be using those dollars to fund K-12, to fund early childhood, to fund mental health and health care services and services for seniors.
Steve Buckstein, would you address that structural deficit that Representative Buckley has mentioned now? Because, I mean, property taxes did fall. The state had to increase school funding to replace lost property taxes with the passage of Ballot Measure 5 in 1990 with no new revenue. Was it inevitable this moment would come?
Well, because I think the state doesn't do a very effective job at spending money, yes, it may be inevitable. But as Representative Buckley said, the quality education model says that we're something like $2 billion short of what we should spend in education. But that model has really been debunked. We debunked it in an academic study shortly after it occurred. It was based on goals that you can't even measure today. They had to be changed. The SIM and CAM tests that went away, you know, they were trying to measure how to get 90% of Oregon students to achieve those goals, and the goals were faulty. So I don't buy the argument that we're $2 billion short. If you look at the National Education Association national statistics, they have no reason to favor or punish Oregon. You know, we're spending well over $11,000 per student, probably closer to $12,000 per student right now, and that should be more than enough money to do a good job if the money is spent effectively.
And Seamus Linsky from the Oregon Consumer League, I want to bring you in here. We heard Steve Buckstein just now, and earlier Steve said he likened Measure 97 to a sales tax on steroids, calling it disingenuous. The No side has used a shopping cart logo, in fact, to raise awareness and say that prices will rise due to this measure. Will they?
We don't believe they will. They won't. We studied this ourselves. We looked at so keep in mind, this tax is only going to affect about 1,000 companies. These are mostly large and out-of-state corporations that have national pricing strategies. And so when we looked at those types of corporations, we looked at your Walmarts, we looked at Kroger, we see that the cost of cereal, the cost of diapers is the same across the country. They don't determine their prices on the amount they pay in corporate taxes in each state. This is just a scare tactic that corporations use every time there's any sort of tax proposal that isn't a direct sales tax or gas tax. So they said the exact same thing about Measure 66 and 67. We didn't see prices increase, and this is even way more narrowly focused than that.
Why do you think, though, that it won't be transferred to the consumers by the corporations that do end up paying it?
Because, like I said, these are large corporations that have national pricing strategies. They don't, every time the taxes change in each state, they don't adjust the pricing in that state. It's much more driven by competition.
Can I step in there? I mean, a lot of that's kind of bunk, right? Because you know, for example, if you go to California or Seattle, the price of a Starbucks is different. You know that the price of gasoline is different. My health insurance isn't priced nationally. My health insurance that I pay in Oregon is different from the price someone would pay for similar health insurance in California. And, you know, sure, maybe cereal, maybe diapers, but when you look at some of the big-ticket things, the things that people spend a lot of money on, those prices are actually very specific to the geography. They may even be specific to the street you're on.
All right, and that was Steve Buckstein speaking from the Cascade Policy Institute. No,
that was Eric.
Oh, that was Eric.
This is Steve. But let me mention one other thing. Seamus is talking, is relying on a report that I believe his organization did with Our Oregon, the union-backed group. But a couple of years earlier, in 2013, the National Consumer League and another union-backed group did a study of these large big-box stores, and they did find that prices varied based on a number of factors around the country. And the 1,000 corporations that will actually write the checks to the state of Oregon for this tax, It sounds like, you know, that's a small number, but they represent half of the private sector wages in the state, and they represent something like 40% of the state's labor force. They're the ones that pay the best wages in the state. And so, again, they may be writing the checks, but as the Legislative Revenue Office says, that is the incidence of the tax, but the impact, the burden, is on all of us, because about two-thirds of this $3 billion, they believe, will be passed on to us as consumers as increases in prices.
Ballot Measure 97, the topic here on the Jefferson Exchange. We have Steve Buckstein and Eric Fruits for the No on 97 side, State Representative Peter Buckley and Seamus Linsky for the Yes on 97 side. We will certainly be taking calls in our Events Day segment. You can join us now at 800-838-3760 for specifics to points here, or you join us by email at jx@jeffnet.org.
We just heard from Seamus Linsky of the Oregon Consumer League that about 1,000 companies are expected to be affected if Measure 97 passes. I want to throw it back to Peter Buckley. We're talking about $3 billion a year here. How big is that compared to the general fund now?
It's a significant increase. Right now, the general fund is right around $19 billion, and this would add about $6 billion to the 2017-19 budget, so it's a significant increase, but it will at long last give us the ability to actually invest in K-12 at a level where we'll start to decrease our class sizes instead of having the third largest class sizes in the country. We'll be able to get back career and technical education courses into our schools, get the arts back into our schools. The things that I had growing up as a kid in public education, I've wanted to get to my kids and every kid in the state of Oregon for years, and we'll finally be able to do that. And I think it's truly significant. And I'd like to counter to the argument some of these best-paying corporations in the state. The University of Oregon's Labor Center did a study on the high price of low wages, and the state of Oregon is subsidizing corporations like Walmart, which would be subject to this tax. We're subsidizing them for hundreds of millions of dollars per year because they pay so poorly. And we are picking up the health care for many of these employees from these corporations.
Eric Fruits, there have been lots of analysis of the potential for more government, obviously, with $3 billion more a year to spend, more government workers, potentially fewer private sector jobs, a number of reports about this. What do you come up with in your own analysis?
Well, I haven't done my own analysis, but I've looked at the, you know, the LRO and the study that was done by Portland State University.
LRO being Legislative Revenue Office?
Yes, I'm sorry, Legislative Revenue Office, right. And, you know, we're looking at, you know, tens of thousands of private sector jobs gone.
Gone or not created?
Or not created. But it's a big drag, right? And those are, you know, what are those people going to be doing? You know, one of the biggest sources of poverty in the country and in Oregon is not low wages. It's people who are not working and not working enough. Now, on the offside, the offsetting is, well, there may be, you know, more people working. One estimate is as high as 30,000 people working in the public sector. I would love to see what that job fair looked like. I don't even know what you would do with 30,000 more people working in the public sector. I imagine, you know, just a lot of sitting around looking for something to do.
We laid off 8,000 educators during the recession, so we could add 8,000 more educators to K-12 without a problem.
So now we got another 24 we have to figure out what to do with.
Mental health workers, people helping senior citizens. There are a number.
But see, that's the point, though. Is there's no promise it's going to happen. You look at what Kate Brown has already promised, and she says that she's going to spend it on things that are completely different from what's specified in the measure.
All right, so let's get to that point. Seamus Linsky, as a supporter of this, the fact is that the legislature's hands are not tied to necessarily go to the three areas, education being the first, that are listed in the ballot title, are they?
Well, Section 3 of the measure does direct the funds to go to early education, K-12, healthcare, and senior services. So, you know, I would kick it back to Representative Buckley, but, you know, it's the legislators who will be spending this money, and they are going to get a mandate from the voters to spend it on those three areas, and many of them are on board with this measure.
But could the legislature change the way the earmarks here, or would that require another vote? Representative Buckley.
When you pass a budget, you're doing another vote. But again, I need to emphasize the priorities listed in Measure 97 are the priorities that the legislature has followed for over 20 years now, trying to invest more in early education, trying to get more money into K-12, trying to fund the senior programs at a level that can reach every senior who needs assistance, trying to fund health care. These are the major areas of the budget. That in itself is almost 70% of the budget. of our current budget that we're trying to fund. So the priorities have already been set by the legislature. They're mirrored by Measure 97.
Would there be any effect, Steve Buckstein, on companies making less than $25 million in Oregon-only sales a year?
Yes. Virtually every company in Oregon will be affected, and every individual, because you have to remember, your small mom-and-pop store on the corner buys things, services, goods, utilities, from big corporations. So their utility bills may go up. The cost of goods may go up. They don't pay the tax directly to the state, but they will be passing those costs along either to their customers in the form of higher prices or their employees in the form of lower compensation or maybe fewer jobs. And you have to realize, you know, Oregonians have voted down retail sales taxes 9 times over, I think, the last 80 years. Your listeners are very aware of that. This was a brilliant political tactic to put this on the ballot as a quote-unquote business tax. But the Legislative Revenue Office economists and Portland State economists, who are public employees, all agree that this is largely a consumption tax and it will hurt low-income households proportionately the most.
But to be absolutely clear, this is not a sales tax in the sense that you go to the store in another state and have to add in the 5% or the 7% or whatever to the purchase price. The purchase price will still be what you see.
Right, but as Fred Thompson, a tax expert at Willamette University, have said, this $3 billion a year is the equivalent, roughly, of a 6% retail sales tax. You just won't see the line item on your bill. And again, some items won't increase in price, some will increase much more. But it is effectively a hidden sales tax on Oregonians.
In terms of
I think we should just be honest about that and let people decide if that's what they want.
In terms of direct effect, though, because you're talking about a lot of indirect effects here, ultimately, on the way you see it on everybody in Oregon, but there's got to be a fairly easy count, I would think, on knowing how many companies would actually pay more.
No, that's the problem. This is a very complicated tax. You look at the business and occupation tax in Washington State, that is just a fraction of this 2.5% on gross sales. They have all kind of exemptions, and I'm not sure, Eric probably knows, a number, dozens, I think, of different tax rates trying to, in effect, ameliorate the negative consequences of gross receipts tax. Most economists nationally realize that this is a very poor tax policy. It doesn't really do what you want it to do, and it hurts people that you don't want to hurt.
And the thing is that, you know, this is the gross receipts tax is a bad tax, and this is probably the worst version of a bad tax because it is applied to everything. It's applied to medicines. It's applied to certain health insurance. It's applied to groceries, whether it's basics like food or expensive things like caviar.
Let's turn it back over to the yes side for a minute, guys. I want to hear from Seamus Linsky, because we're hearing from the no side that it's disingenuous to call it a business task, business tax. What about your view, Seamus? Do you think it's disingenuous to call it a sales tax, as the campaign against Measure 97 has?
Yes, I do think it's disingenuous. It's not a complicated tax. It's just taking the largest C corporations that make over $25 million and taxing them on what they make over that. That's just that's just modifying what's currently paid. If it were just the sales tax, it would seem that the corporations would be supporting it because they've supported sales tax in the past. So it seems disingenuous that all of a sudden they're calling this a sales tax and saying that they're against it when that's the only type of tax they've supported in the past. So it seems like the truth is here. Corporations are going to be the ones to pay this tax. It's not going to get passed through to consumers because it's only affecting 1,000 companies that are competing on a national level and pricing on a national level. And so it's just disingenuous to say that. If they could pass it through, why are they fighting it so hard?
Could businesses change their structures to avoid paying the tax, Seamus Linsky?
I'm not a tax expert, but, I mean, this only affects C-Corp, so if they're not a C-Corp, it wouldn't affect them.
Anyone else want to go?
Steve Buckstein here. The Legislative Revenue Office has predicted a certain percentage of businesses, I think several hundred, I believe, would try to change their tax structure from C corporations to sub S or LLCs. Again, that's part of why this is so complicated, because you can have in the Portland area, Fred Meyer grocery stores is a C corp, but New Seasons is not. And so you get competitive advantages and disadvantages. You're picking winners and losers with this tax. And again, these public economists, public employee economists, all agree this will act largely as a consumption tax.
Well, I would encourage everyone to read the reports themselves and not just accept the summary of it. The Tax Foundation has also done a report, but all the reports say that it actually has a very minimal impact on the economy as a whole. And we talk about 36,000 jobs in the context of the state of Oregon. We created 29,000 jobs in the month of June of this year. So these numbers that are being thrown around with a great alarm, I think, need to be looked at rationally. And I think every report should be actually read, because the characterizations of the report, I don't find to be completely accurate that what's being proposed today. And people need to keep in mind, too, a C corporation is a shareholder organization. So it's quite possible that shareholders might receive a little bit less for their shares in Walmart or their shares in Bank of America. That is one impact that could happen with this tax. But there's no tax that's perfect, and this tax is one in asking corporations that currently pay a very, very low rate of taxes in the state of Oregon to actually pay more to fund education. I think it's absolutely necessary.
Peter Buckley.
Wait, Oregon did not add 29,000 jobs in June. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Is that June?
Okay.
3,000. 2,900. 2,900, I'm sorry.
2,900, yeah. Okay. Different number. That one.
So it's about a year's worth of job losses.
And Steve Buckstein here, this is one thing I agree with Representative Buckley on. People should read the reports, but we all know, everybody knows, that most people aren't going to read these very dense 20-page reports. But those of us who have, you can just do a Google search or do a search on these reports online and put in consumption tax, and see what they say about how this will be largely a consumption tax.
Yeah, and the thing to keep in mind, too, is that when you've got, when you're paying, $600 per family, right, that's like maybe two additional car payments, or it could be two additional student loan payments. That's books for a school year if you're in college. Can you afford to pay for an extra $600? Can you afford two extra car payments?
All right, gentlemen, if you can give us 5 more minutes, I want to come back to you after this break. Would that be all right for all of you?
Yes, sure.
Okay, back talk to talk more about Measure 97.
Back on the Jefferson Exchange, I'm Emily Curitan here with Jeffrey Riley, and you are welcome to join this discussion. We're talking about the pros and cons of Measure 97. We've got Peter Buckley, state representative from Ashland, Seamus Linsky of the Oregon Consumer League, Steve Buckstein from the Cascade Policy Institute, and Eric Fruits, all on the line, and hopefully you will be joining us. 800-838-3760 to do that by phone, or send your emails to jx@jeffnet.org.
We'll turn it over to Vince Day in just a moment here. I want to have a couple of more issues here I want to flesh out on ballot measure 97, which is the increase in corporate taxes on the Oregon ballot in November, which is being characterized as a sales tax on steroids by the no side. I want to talk just in general terms about some of these side-by-side comparisons of Oregon's overall business tax burden. And I know that Seamus Linsky, it seems like information coming out of the Yes on 97 side indicates that Oregon is very low. What's your source for that?
Yeah, accurate. Our source for that is the independent Anderson Economic Group. They, for the last 3 years, have shown that Oregon is dead last in corporate taxes, overall corporate taxes. When you take the tax burden combined for corporations per state, Oregon comes in 50th.
Okay, Eric Fruits, I took a look at that particular report from Anderson Consulting Group. It lumped state and local tax burdens together and then compared them with pre-tax gross operating margin. Is that a fair way, you think, to compare states side by side?
It's a so-so way, but one of the things it really misses is the fact that although Oregon is a relatively low-tax state on businesses, it charges relatively high fees and charges. So if you combine the fees and charges with the taxes, that pops Oregon back up there. And then also, if you add in Measure 97, that will take us from where we are now to having the highest, one of the highest, if not the highest, tax burdens. Now, Oregon already has a lot of bad things going for from a business standpoint. We're really good at starting businesses, really terrible at growing businesses. You know, when a business gets big enough to really make a difference, they leave. They get bought out, or they leave the state. And Measure 97 is going to really encourage any business, once they're getting that $25 million level, if they're thinking about, say, maybe going public, that they're going to want to reconsider where they're located.
Would Oregon,
because
for example,
they don't want to get hit with that tax because they're not going to get in. You know, what do they get? What's the return on investment from being in Oregon?
But that's exactly what corporations said when Measure 66 and 67 was being proposed. And how many corporations left when that was passed?
Well, that's a question then I get back to Eric Fruits about. This still doesn't get the Oregon tax rate overall on business as high as California's, for example, does it?
Well, and that's why, you know, one of the reasons why Oregon is so attractive to California businesses is because we're better than the worst state. Part of our success is our geography, that we have California to the south of us. If you look at other things, like, for example, except for the very highest level of incomes, Oregon's personal income tax rate's one of the worst in the country, and can be, for a lot of people, lower than California's.
Individuals have been paying their fair share for a long time, which is exactly why we've proposed this tax on the large C corporations that are making over $25 million.
Well, see, and that's the issue, is if you want to go after corporations and their profits. And what you're doing here is you're going after corporations through their consumers. You know, you're making the person who shops at the gas station pay more.
So this is on the gross and not
the net?
Making
the person who shops at Fred Meyer pay more. And you're saying that that Fred Meyer's going to pay it, but it's really the consumer. Your milk's going to get more expensive. Your eggs, the clothes you buy at Fred Meyer are going to be more expensive.
Again,
let's cut in here.
I honestly hear that. All listeners can go to yeson97.org and take this challenge themselves. They can go online and look at pricing for eggs or bread or whatever they like see for themselves that.
Unfortunately, gentlemen, we're running out of time here, and we have one question left. I'd like to send it to Representative Peter Buckley and ask, could this windfall, if it passes, be sent directly to pay down the public pension obligations, PERS?
PERS is part of every agency that we have in the state budget and every local government agency as well, with the exception of some of the universities have different retirement plans. So when you're looking at the PERS payment, that is part of the K-12 system, that is part of the early childhood system that we have, the mental health system, the healthcare system. It's an inevitable part of the state budget.
All right, a lot to take in, very complicated repercussions on deck for Measure 97 if it passes or if it doesn't. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us. We've had Peter Buckley, Seamus Linsky from the Oregon Consumer League, Steve Buckstein from Cascade Policy Institute, and Eric Fruits, an Economics International Corporation president. Thanks, gentlemen.